Planning Commission.
Okay. Welcome to the Planning Commission meeting for 19 April 2022. Thank you for participating in this meeting. Out of respect for people when they're speaking and listening, please mute all microphones, cell phones, and other electronic devices prior to entering the meeting. And we would refrain from conducting sidebar conversations when somebody's speaking. For members of the public wishing to comment during the public meetings, during the designated times, the following options are available. For internet users, there is a raise hand feature in the Zoom box that you can click and it will be seen, and then we will call on you and your sound will be unmuted. We ask that you announce your name and that you speak only at the approximate time of 2 minutes. Call-in users, use *9 on your keypad to signal you'd like to comment. The last four digits of the call-in number will be announced and your sound will be unmuted. And then please state your first name and last name before speaking. You may need to do *6 to unmute your phone. We do accept written comments to be read during the public comment period if submitted to presenting staff members or via email to A. Walston, co.kitsap.wa.us by 2 p.m. on the day prior to the meeting. And we will limit the speaking of a reading of those to the two limit period. Please ensure on written comments that you have the date of the meeting that you want your comments read on, your name and your name, and whether the participant lives in Kitsap County, town, or residence, and the agenda item or subject that you're speaking on. And for general comments, we do limit those to 2 minutes, and we ask that everybody follow normal courtesies when speaking. Okay, introductions. We will start on Central Kitsap.
I'm Stephen Bowe with Central Kitsap.
Okay, thank you.
Hello, I'm Richard Shattuck from Central Kitsap.
And I'm Alan Beam from Central Kitsap.
And North Kitsap?
Amy Mall, North Kitsap.
And Joe Phillips, North Kitsap. Two of our South Kitsap members were excused from the meeting, and we did lose one of our members. She has moved out of the area, and Commissioner Murphy also was excused from the meeting. Okay, we went over the protocol. Adoption of the agenda. Do I have a motion for the adoption of the agenda?
I'll motion to adopt the agenda.
Thank you, Commissioner Bowe.
Second? I'll second that.
Thank you. Okay, all those in favor of the agenda as printed, please raise your hands and say yes. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. It's unanimous. Okay, thank you. Next item is the adoption of the minutes for March 15th. Do I have a motion to adopt the minutes?
I'll move to adopt the minutes of March 15th.
Okay. Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
All right. All right. Any discussion on the minutes? Okay. All those in favor of adoption of the minutes, please signal by raising your hand or saying yes. All right, past 5. Okay, now we come to item E, general public comments. Do we have any comments at this time?
I'm not seeing anyone, but I will say that the we got a message that the code was not working. The code and link were not working on the website. So I just updated those. They're correct on the agenda. And I've updated the website. So those are there too. So we may, at the second break, there may be someone. So if someone was trying to get in early on, they may not have been able to get in, but I just updated it, so.
Okay, so we do not have any, the code was wrong for the public calling.
Mm-hmm. It's correct on the agenda, but the direct link, the code was wrong.
Oh.
Yeah, so the agenda, if they open the agenda, everything is there, but the link that was listed. So it's been updated now. We do have one attendee who was trying to get in. She's in now, so.
Okay. Bit of a quandary.
You can delay it, and if we get any other people on, you can have your comment period later.
Well, we do have a second comment period, so we will go ahead and close this comment period, and hopefully if somebody's wanting to get in, we will have them on our agenda on H. Okay. And that brings us to item F, the briefing for the 2024 Comprehensive Plan Update by Mr. Baker.
Thank you very much. For the record, my name is Eric Baker. I'm with Kitsap County Commissioner's Office. I will attempt to share my screen here. I understand you have other items on the agenda, so I will try not to belabor my points, which anybody who knows me knows is that's very hard for me. So I apologize up front. So with the 2024 comprehensive plan coming up, a number of planning commissioners felt it was helpful to kind of walk through the various components of that make up the comp plan in advance of you guys having to go through large reams of documents. With a lot of heady decisions and recommendations. So I gave you a presentation last month that just kind of outlined how the update was going to be moving forward and some of the big ticket items, including housing, that might be part of this. But the first thing I kind of wanted to cover is how we go about some of the layers of planning that go into this, which for this, I'm going to be focusing on the Puget Sound Regional Council's Vision 2050, which is a regional plan, and the growth targets that are included in the regional growth strategy. I'm hearing that everything's a little too big for my screen. Are people not seeing the full slides?
No, it's just we're seeing the bottom left corner of it.
Well, that ain't gonna do it. So give me a second here. All right, so let's try this again. Okay, everybody see something?
There we go.
All right, well, I'm going to try to blow this back up to my full screen again and tell me if it gets off.
Okay. Perfect.
We're still good. All right, let me go back to where we were. So again, we're going to talk about Vision 2050 and growth targets as we're in the process of working through what growth through 2044 might look like for Kitsap County. So kind of walking through some of the basic aspects, obviously the Growth Management Act is the state law that we are planning under. That is the statute that we all have to meet. It is relatively short in many ways and vague in a lot of ways. So there's a lot of layers underneath it that kind of flesh out some of the aspects of what the Growth Management Hearings Board perceives is the Growth Management Act. First of which are the multi-county planning policies. That is, again, Vision 2050, which I'll talk a little bit more about in a moment. That is overseen by the Puget Sound Regional Council. Kitsap County is a member of that council, as well as Snohomish, King, and Pierce counties. There are a transportation funding body. I'll talk a little more about that, but they also have Vision 2050, which is the overarching regional planning document for the four counties. And part of that is a regional growth strategy, which kind of establishes population and employment projections and soon housing targets for all of Kitsap County. Then we moved down to the countywide planning policies. Based upon that information, we have the countywide planning policies that is worked through with the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council. That's a more local body that includes the counties and cities, as well as the Port of Bremerton, the Port of Kingston, our two tribes, and I believe Transit is also a member. The Growth Management Act is very specific about the fact that we must be consistent with the countywide planning policies. The multi-county planning policies are important because without maintaining certification with the Puget Sound Regional Council, we get cut out of transportation money. But the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council and the countywide planning policies are the document that we need to meet to ensure that we are compliant with the Growth Management Act, which is even more important. And then local planning. After we have all these overarching goals and policies at the region and at the county level, it goes down to local planning, where in each of our comprehensive plans, we have to make a series of lofty goals real. And that's where the rubber hits the road. That's where we have to truly take and show how we are going to make, again, these very important yet very lofty goals marry one with one another, as they don't always play together nicely. So I'm going to start with the Puget Sound Regional Council. As I indicated before, they are the access to our federal transportation funding. That is the Surface Transportation Program, the new infrastructure package. All that infrastructure money is going to go through the state, but another big chunk is going to go through the Puget Sound Regional Council. And then our transit facilities receive a lot of money through these programs as well. Their purpose is to try to ensure consistent regional goals across the counties. The regional growth strategy is one example, as well as improve regional coordination. So they help with things such as housing, climate change, and a series of other, again, regional efforts. The Puget Sound Regional Council, a number of folks kind of have a love-hate relationship with it. Obviously, it feels very much like some top-down planning. But per state statute, we need to have some kind of what is called a Metropolitan Transportation Organization. That helps us get to those federal dollars. There have been conversations in the past about why don't we pull out of the Puget Sound Regional Council? That way we don't have to worry about the top-down nature of them and go it alone. Just be one of those transportation organizations unto ourselves. The short answer and not surprising answer is it would mean a lot less money for Kitsap County. Kitsap County receives millions of dollars of transportation funding every 2 years. If we were to go it alone, we would receive less than half of that funding. Plus, we also would not be able to participate in some of the other regional discussions on housing, climate, the economic development district. Also, we would be left out of, and that also provides a certain amount of additional funding. So why is it very important to be a member of the Puget Sound Regional Council? It is an avenue to collect millions of dollars of transportation money for projects in Silverdale, Port Orchard, the cities, all around, as well as a substantial amount of money for our transit system. Let me pause there before I go any further. Anyone have any questions that they want to ask so far? I don't want to speak for 20 minutes and then everyone forget what they wanted to ask. I'll take that as a no. So located in Vision 2050, again, with all the goals about land use and about transportation and the environment and stormwater, one of the key components is the regional growth strategy. It's really important when I show you the numbers, I'm going to show you that these are targets, not projections. They're not necessarily based on past growth rates or past performance. They are a picture of how the region wants to grow over time. So in many ways, they're aspirational in nature. They are top-down, as I indicated. So again, the Puget Sound Regional Council approves these growth targets. Kitsap County worked very hard with the Puget Sound Regional Council to come up with the numbers that I'm going to show you in a moment. It isn't exactly what we wanted, but it was as close as we were going to be able to get. And then soon there's going to be housing targets established. So that is, we're going to have to not only show how our various areas are going to accommodate population, but what kind of housing are they going to be living in? And how is that housing going to be affordable to a number of different income levels? There's a state statute that also focuses on that. So housing is going to be a new barometer for how Kitsap County grows, not just population and employment like we have for the last 30 years. The focus of growth is really on regional centers. For unincorporated Kitsap, that's Silverdale. Bremerton is also a regional center, as is Puget Sound Industrial Center Bremerton, otherwise known as the South Kitsap Industrial Area, located down by the airport. Those are our three regional centers, and population and employment, a lion's share, are going to those areas. And then secondly, there's countywide centers. For us, the unincorporated areas, that's Kingston and the corner of McWilliams and 303. I think there's a Walgreens there. I think there's a Safeway there. There's also some apartments in that general area. That is another center, countywide center, where growth is intended to be focused. Population and employment targets are spread out by what they call geographies, which are, they break them into certain categories, and I'm going to show you what those mean for Kitsap County. Again, the place where most of the growth is supposed to go is our metropolitan areas. That's Bremerton and its urban growth area, both in West Bremerton and East Bremerton. Then there are the core cities, which ironically, our core city is not a city at all. It's Silverdale. That's where the next tier of growth is supposed to go. Then you move to high capacity transit communities, which is Poulsbo, Port Orchard, their UGAs. And when I say UGA, I apologize. I mean urban growth area. So that is an area that is supposed to be urban. Anything that's not an urban growth area is supposed to be rural or a limited area of more intensive rural development, which again is not intended to be receiving growth. Next up is unincorporated UGAs. For us, that's only one. That's the Central Kitsap UGA. When I presented to you last month, I kind of showed you where that was. That's kind of between Rydell Road and Wagga Way. Barker Creek is kind of the cutoff over in that East Bremerton area. That area abuts the city of Bremerton, but it's not associated with the city of Bremerton. It is a standalone unincorporated UGA. And then lastly, rural areas. That's the place where growth is supposed to go absolutely last and is supposed to be minimized to the best of our ability. I'm going to pause there and see if there's any questions based upon how the PSRC kind of stratifies growth. Mr. Beam.
Quick question. Where did they define McWilliams as a growth area? Which document?
That is actually in the countywide planning policies. So that actually wasn't from the Puget Sound Regional Council. That was through the countywide planning policies that were adopted, I believe, last year, that were as focused on centers. Any other questions? Okay, moving on. Oh, wait. Alan, did you have a follow-up?
Countywide planning policies. Are we going to be briefed on that as a planning commission at any point?
Yes. I'm starting top down with these presentations. So starting at the Puget Sound Regional Council, especially because their numbers are really going to be something that we're discussing right now in regards to population and employment. But the countywide planning policies will likely be my next presentation when I come to you again. Excellent. All right, so now taking a look at this is probably a little fuzzier than I kind of hoped it would be. But when they go through, the Puget Sound Regional Council designated a certain amount of population growth to each of the counties and to each of the various geographies within the counties. If you take a look at this purple band, you can see that 34% of our population growth is supposed to be going to Bremerton. 16% is supposed to be going to core cities, Silverdale. High capacity transit communities, which again is Poulsbo, Port Orchard, Bainbridge, and Kingston, is another 36% of growth. We don't have any small cities and towns. The urban unincorporated area, which is the CK UGA, is 6,000. And then the rural area is 8,000. So all in all, those are the numbers that have been distributed. The urban unincorporated areas got drastically reduced in growth They aren't supposed to receive as much as the other UGAs for reasons that we have debated and were unsuccessful. These numbers that you see here are through 2050. Our planning has to go through 2044. So these numbers aren't exactly what we're going to be planning to, but I'll go into that a little more in a moment. And then we also have employment targets. Again, looking at the purple band, we have 35% going to Bremerton, 26% going to Silverdale, 32% going to Bainbridge, Port Orchard, Poulsbo, and Kingston, 2% going to urban unincorporated, and then 5% going to rural. And again, these numbers are through 2050. So after they kind of split all these up by county and then also by geography within the county, they come down to the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council. So this isn't the full briefing, Commissioner Beam. There is a much broader conversation. This is just to provide some context as to what the countywide planning policies and the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council is supposed to do. Again, the members are the county, cities, large ports, tribes, and transit. Currently, what we have been tasked with is updating the local population and employment targets. So as you notice, you kind of go back to these tables. Generally, these numbers are pretty split out. Like metropolitan is Bremerton, so that's pretty easy to determine. Core cities is Silverdale, also pretty easy. But once you get to the high capacity transit community and you look at this, you look at whatever number is there through 2044, we have to split that up amongst all the jurisdictions and their UGAs. So that is has to be a negotiation between the cities and the county. So, and again, these are all through 2044. Currently, we are planning through 2036. So Kitsap and the growth that you see is supposed to take a look at 8 more years than we're currently planning for. So now here's some of the numbers that come along with that. Taking a look at, again, I've only focused here on our urban growth areas. These are the ones that apply directly to Kitsap County. There are city numbers as well, but for simplicity's sake. So we've been negotiating targets through here for population from Kingston on down to Central Kitsap. We've compared them to the 2021 Buildable Lands Report. The Buildable Lands Report took a look at each of our urban growth areas and said, okay, here's how many people you can fit into them as of 2021. And then when you take the target and you take it to the comparable capacity, you find out how many more people you need to accommodate in each of these areas. So for Kingston, it's about 600 people. Poulsbo, it's 100. Bremerton, it's 340. The Bremerton UGA is 340. The Port Orchard UGA is pretty much static. And then Silverdale has a huge number that needs to be accommodated. And then the Central Kitsap UGA has just a very, very small number. These targets are based upon just generally how we are looking to disperse growth over the county. Kingston has a larger number than normal. It is now a countywide center, which means it is eligible for significantly greater transportation funding. It now has a passenger-only ferry. Thus, the Puget Sound Regional Council, the Kitsap Regional Coordinating Council, and our comprehensive plan is going to expect that it takes more people and more employment. So I'm going to show the maps of these areas here in a moment. But when we talk about accommodating this population, this does not necessarily mean that we need to expand the urban growth area boundaries to fit 609 new people. The first thing jurisdictions have to do is they have to look inside their existing UGAs and look for ways to upzone particular areas, fit more people in a smaller space. That can be increasing densities in places. That can be providing incentives for density in particular places. So when you look at each one of these numbers, this doesn't mean necessarily widespread urban growth area boundary expansions. The conversation has to be had, but first we need to look inside of each urban growth area. While I'm on this table, does anybody have any questions that they'd like to ask?
One question I had was, where does the landmark limited use areas come into play?
They aren't targets for growth. In theory, they are a set number of lots with a set number of people, and that number is never supposed to change. That in
even though they're somewhat employment centers.
In theory, if you're talking about Suquamish and Manchester and Keyport, those are intended to somewhat be snapshots in time. However, there is a new state statute just adopted this session that may allow some flexibility in that. However, we're still not supposed to put growth into these areas. So we're supposed to acknowledge what they were in 1990 and acknowledge the growth that they're going to take, but not actively try to push more growth into these areas.
Okay.
So they are definitely more, they feel more urban than rural, but they're not fully urban. They aren't intended to be taking more population and more employment, and that's why they don't show in the state.
Okay.
They fall into that rural number. So the entirety of the rural area, LAMRDs or otherwise, and LAMRDs stand for limited areas of more intensive rural development. And no, I'm not kidding. So yes, that all fits into the rural number.
All right. And then I assume that Port Gamble is in that same area?
Yes, it's a National Historic Town. So it is LAMRD adjacent. So it's a different type of thing, but feels very, very much like a LAMRD.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Other questions? So I can't see everyone's faces. All right. Moving on to employment. Basically, same dispersion. But what you're going to note here is that, again, Kingston is looking at about 582 new jobs. So these aren't people. These are new jobs for employees. The Poulsbo UGA is staying pretty much static. If anybody has seen the Poulsbo UGA, it's a few little tiny parcels here or there. None of it is commercial or industrially zoned. So the fact we have 97 employees in their period is a pretty large number considering the zoning. The Bremerton UGA actually has to be reduced by 20. So when I talk about the Bremerton UGA, what am I largely talking about? I'm talking about the East Bremerton area around Perry Avenue, Trenton Avenue, Enatai Beach. I'm also talking about the areas around Kitsap Lake and the areas between Gorst and Bremerton. So those areas, as well as the Puget Sound Industrial Center, which isn't all the city of Bremerton. There are pieces of unincorporated Kitsap. We're going to have to take a look, and we're going to have to find a way to potentially shrink the UGA by 20 people. That does seem a little too finite and a little too granular. So we may be just okay living with 20 people, 20 jobs not allocated. The Port Orchard UGA needs 328 additional jobs. Silverdale needs, oddly enough, Silverdale, which is one of our largest employment centers, has the largest employment need, growth need. So we're looking at 6,300 new folks. And then lastly, the Central Kitsap UGA, pretty much, again, much like the Bremerton UGA, is pretty close to the pin, as I call it. Questions about employment projections? Or targets, not projections. Targets.
In terms of the Silverdale area, are we primarily talking about medical and Navy, or is there other industries that we're expecting?
In Silverdale?
Yes.
In Silverdale, it's going to be a mix. I think obviously with the new hospital, medical is going to be a big component. Most of our calculations about capacity for employment in Silverdale are based on single-story construction because, well, historically, most of our construction has been single story. With medical becoming a thing and a pretty big thing, you're now talking about multi-story construction. So you're going to be able to fit more employees in the same footprint than you could previously. But medical, I think you're going to be seeing seeing the continuation of retail, additional services, and then there is again some continued industrial uses out in the Dickey Road area, the area that wasn't converted to residential.
Okay, and to follow on to your question, you mentioned military. Military is not, the numbers aren't counted here, correct?
Military is a separate animal. Another thing we argued very strongly about at the Puget Sound Regional Council as major military installations are a classification, but they aren't given the weight of a regional center. They aren't given the weight of a countywide center. They are, because we can't make them plan in any particular way, they are just kind of there, which for certain counties isn't a big deal. But for Pierce County, who has McCord as a JBLM, Joint Base McCord, Fort Lewis, and us, it's kind of a big deal, as those are our biggest employment centers, yet we still aren't capturing them in here. So that's something that we're going to have to address in the comprehensive plan, because you just can't pretend they don't exist.
Good. Thank you.
All right, so just kind of working through some of these. Can everybody see my cursor, or is it just me who can see my cursor? Okay, good.
We can see it.
We can see my cursor. So I'm just going to spend a little bit of time talking about some of the areas around Kingston. What you're going to find is we're going to be focusing a lot in some of the downtown areas on ways that we can incentivize additional density, and that largely is commercial zones. And for this is the Urban Village Center area. How we can provide, get more people in, especially with the Kingston Ferry located down there. We are also looking to relocate the highway so that it doesn't run right through downtown. It kind of swerves around the outside of it. So the downtown will be a more attractive pedestrian and non-ferry traffic environment. But also we have some areas like here, which is, this is the Arborwood development. Which is approved 10, 15 years ago. In 2012, when we had to shrink the UGAs, we actually dropped part of the Arborwood development out of the UGA. What did that do? That changed the math, but didn't change reality. They were still a vested project. This area could develop fully urban, even though it's outside the rural area because it's vested. So probably when we're talking about handling population, logical areas like that should come back in, as well as any other area that may be located out in the rural area and has some kind of urban service, like sewer. So we're going to be looking at those types of things first. Any questions about my 30,000 foot, way too early, way too premature discussions about Kingston? All right. Next, this is the West Bremerton area I was talking about. All of these areas here in color are unincorporated Kitsap. We have Navy Yard City, Crazy Eric's is here. This is where the STEM school is. Not me, Crazy Eric's, but the old burger place. You have Rocky Point, which has always been out of the city. And I believe that their water system may have been taken over by the city over time. So I think there's some discussions the city's going to have with those folks. And then this area that overlooks State Highway 3, as we're all slogging through the Gorse bottleneck. If you look up on the hill, this is the rest of the UGA. So there are some areas up in here that have sewer yet are in the rural area. I believe the city might be interested in seeing those inside an urban area because, well, urban services belong in urban areas. I think that's in the second sentence of GMA probably. The Port Orchard UGA, Port Orchard and Poulsbo and Bremerton have all grown miraculously. I mean, not miraculously, incredibly. They have grown exactly as GMA would have intended. And for years, we spent this time talking about how the cities need to take more growth. Well, over the last 5 to 8 years, the cities have taken this growth. The city of Port Orchard in particular, out in the McCormick area, has grown, I think, somewhere in the 15% rate over that period of time, not annually, but over that period of time. So the cities are doing their part. They are doing, as GMA says, they're taking in the population. But because there's so much capacity in the city right now, it affects the UGA and exactly how many folks we can put into it. So we're going to have to work through the city and the UGA for Port Orchard particularly as kind of one unit. So that will be a little bit of a challenge as we deal with both population and employment. And then we got the Silverdale area. Silverdale is, for unincorporated Kitsap, the biggest area that we need to be focusing growth. And again, going back to it, it's going to be the downtown area that we are going to be looking to incentivize becoming something more than just a retail center. As Mr. Shattuck brought up, we have a new hospital, and there's going to be a new medical campus on there, and that's going to be an entirely different set of employees and different neighborhood qualities. But also, we need to bring people downtown. COVID, if COVID taught us one thing, small businesses need people living nearby them. So many businesses in Silverdale struggled because people stopped going to the retail establishments, and when they stopped going to the retail establishments, they stopped stopping at Hop Jacks. They stopped stopping at Spiro's, or they stopped stopping at all the various small businesses. To have a robust restaurant and service industry in good times and bad, population in the downtown is important. We're looking to incentivize that through potentially a multifamily tax exemption, which would provide a property tax exemption for people who are doing multifamily housing. Not surprisingly, considering what the title was. But that is the type of thing we might be looking at to hopefully, as portions of Silverdale move to their next redevelopment phase, there's a certain number of years that commercial buildings last until they move to their okay, what am I going to be when I, what am I going to be next? And we're reaching that on a number of components of Silverdale. So we need to make sure that we have the necessary incentives in place so people can think beyond just what's the next retail that's going into my shopping complex. How am I going to improve the facades and bring in the next Dick's Sporting Goods? This is kind of the area that we're talking about. Again, it is Buckland Hill Road, which has been improved. When you think about the transportation dollars that I'm talking about, Buckland Hill Road was funded by about $6 million of it. That $6 million that didn't directly come out of local taxes. Would this bridge have been able to be built without funding from the Puget Sound Regional Council and those federal funds? Probably not. Ridgetop is obviously the next item up for bids, as well as all the work you've seen down here in on Silverdale. So these are large-scale improvements that need those federal funds. Thus why the Puget Sound Regional Council and Vision 2050 is still a big deal for our transportation system. I already showed you the CKUGA last time. It abuts the city of Bremerton, as I showed you, but is unassociated. Likely there'll have to be some discussion about that. So this one, I would not expect to see a lot of changes to this over time or in the 2024 update. Except for when I think the question came up about the McWilliams Center, that's right here. So again, you see a bunch of urban high density, which is our highest residential densities, and then our commercial areas. So where are we going from here? All of those targets I showed you are draft. They are going to have to be refined a little bit over time. Kitsap County has put its best assumptions to it. The cities have done the same. Eventually, the electeds are going to have to decide, are these the numbers that they want to move forward with, in which case then they're going to update the countywide planning policies with it. There's probably going to be some public outreach opportunities and definitively a public hearing for people to testify on those population and employment numbers. These employment numbers fit into what I call the demand side of the equation. Planning isn't just words. Unfortunately, GMA and the Growth Management Hearings Board has made planning more math, where you have to make sure that you are meeting your numbers. So those numbers I showed you, that's the demand side. That's how many people I need to accommodate coming into the county over time. And then we have the supply side, which is the land capacity analysis. Based on calculations, how many people can we fit per acre? How many jobs can we fit per acre? And have we zoned it properly? The two need to be married together, and we need to come as close to the pin as possible. I spend more time looking at Excel spreadsheets than I ever thought I would as a planner. And I'm not an academically trained planner, so I wouldn't be as shocked by it as some of those people went to school for it, in which case then it's just an entirely new world, as I don't think they looked at an Excel spreadsheet anytime during their 4 years. And then lastly, after the countywide planning policies are updated, they're ratified by the cities, all the jurisdictions are going to utilize those to size their UGAs and develop their comprehensive plans. What that basically is going to mean for Kitsap County is through a public process, we're eventually going to come up with three land use alternatives that are going to hopefully marry that demand, the demand for population employment and the supply. And that is going to have to be done somewhere in early spring, I'll call January, spring 2023, though likely it's probably more like April and May or winter, but still. January 2023 is when these alternatives are going to have to come forward. So you're going to be seeing a lot of public outreach over the next 6 to 9 months as we get to that point. So with that, I'm going to pause and take questions from anybody who is not actually in the Department of Community Development. All right, well, I have either successfully bored you. If you're looking for additional information, or please, well, if you just email me at any time. Please, no, don't. Multiple planning commissioners come and all ask the same questions. Then you get into some kind of chain meeting scenarios. But if you have individual questions about anything that I've presented here, or anything you'd like to see come up in future presentations, please email me. You'll get responses all day and all night. And I greatly appreciate your time tonight. And I hope you will suffer through me multiple times in the future.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. So next item on our agenda is the work study for the Public Works Department of Ecology permit requirement update. And I believe Sarah Olson will be presenting.
That's me. Hi, everybody. Hi. Thanks for having me again. It's good to see you all. So I'm just going to jump in and start my presentation. I'm going to screen share. Let me pull this up.
And before you start your presentation, I'd like the commissioners to hold their questions. If you do think of a question, write it down so we can address it. But I'd like Ms. Olson be able to get through her presentation.
Thank you. I appreciate right. that. Okay, so can everyone see my screen okay?
Yes.
Okay, perfect. So we're going to be talking about the pollution prevention or best management practice ordinance. And we're going to start off with a presentation overview. I'm going to go over quickly what stormwater overview, source control, pollution generating businesses with examples, kind of delve more into source control BMPs than we did last time. And talk about the ordinance and next steps. So we're here because Department of Ecology is requiring us to adopt an ordinance. So it says, permittee shall adopt and make effective an ordinance or other enforceable documents requiring the application of source-controlled BMPs for pollutant-generating sources associated with existing land uses and activities. So here is the updated code after we took your recommendations from the last meeting. We came up with this draft and hope you like it. Does anyone need time to read through this, or did everyone have a chance to read through it before we got to this meeting? Should I leave it on this slide just in a few minutes more?
I believe all the commissioners are up to date on what was presented.
Okay, perfect. All right, what is stormwater? Stormwater is the runoff during and following precipitation and snowmelt events, including surface runoff, drainage, and interflow. As stormwater flows over the ground surface, the runoff picks up metals, gasoline, sediment, pathogens, and nutrients from our everyday activities and flows into storm drains, ditches, and pipes. This storm surface runoff is the leading transporter of pollution into Puget Sound and local wetlands, creeks, streams, and rivers. So, source control. What is source control? the control of pollutants from entering storm and surface water by using best management practices. To stay in compliance with ecology, Kitsap County is required to adopt an ordinance and program that requires pollutant generating businesses to implement BMPs to prevent pollution. This includes inspections, enforcement, and staff training. So what exactly is a pollutant generating business? It's when typical daily activities of the business creates potential for pollutants to be released to the environment. Examples of these type of businesses include mobile businesses, auto repair, restaurants, gas stations, grocery, fleet rentals, dry cleaners, rock quarries. So there are three types of source control best management practices, operational, structural, and treatment. So I thought we would go through each one really quickly. Operational source control BMPs are non-structural practices that prevent or reduce pollutants from entering stormwater. Common examples of operational BMPs include sweeping, labeling chemical containers with contents, having a spill kit, creating a spill plan, training staff on how to clean up spills and spill prevention, and eliminating wash water from discharging to the storm system. Next, we have structural source control BMPs. These are physical, structural, or mechanical devices or facilities that are intended to prevent pollutants from entering stormwater. These will only be required if operational BMPs do not prevent pollutant discharges. Common examples of these include berms, plastic sheeting, oil water separators, herbicide pesticide storage in covered and impervious containment, spill containment sumps, covering over a dumpster, or paving. Treatment source control BMPs are intended to remove pollutants from stormwater. These will only be required if operational and structural source control BMPs do not prevent pollutant discharges. Common examples include biofiltration spills, filter strips, conveying high potential oil spill areas to be directed to sanitary sewer with an oil water separator as pretreatment. So what will businesses need to do? All businesses will be required to meet applicable operational source control BMPs outlined in the Ecology Manual. Page 497 of the Ecology Manual is where those source control BMPs start, and I provided the link there. So an example of some inspection items at a restaurant would be keeping the dumpster area clean and trash picked up, keep used cooking oil storage bin free of leaks and the lid closed, maintaining the grease interceptor to prevent sewer overflows, hood vent filter and floor mat cleaning wash water to sewer, floor drains connected to the sewer system, mop water dumped inside to be treated by the sewer system, spill plan in place, spill kit on site, storm drains cleaned within typical schedule. So pretty normal, common things that a restaurant is already doing. Here is an example I pulled from the Ecology Manual for storage of liquid, food waste, or dangerous waste. Here are the operational BMPs. There are more than this for this one. This is just a little snapshot of what that BMP in the manual looks like. And I thought I'd talk really quickly about other municipalities. Other counties and cities have already have this ordinance and inspection program in place for many years, including Snohomish County, King County, Pierce. Local municipalities such as City of Port Orchard, Bremerton, Paulsboro, and Bainbridge are all in the process of adopting this program. We are working together to make sure our outreach and information given to businesses is similar. So we're all trying to work together. We have a group going of, amongst ourselves of this whole process and helping each other through it. Here's our public outreach process. You've kind of already chatted about this before last meeting, but we're sending out, postcards and stuff to local businesses. And we have the public information open house on April 26th. I'll get to that in just a second. Here is the postcard that we're sending out. Residents should, businesses should be getting that this week or next week. And it has information about how to register for the ordinance open house, as well as information about the draft. Here's the website again, how to register for that open house on the right. Public comment form available for anyone. It's open now. And one last thing I wanted to talk about, the proposed ordinance language that we came up with for this meeting. We were talking about it recently this week, and it was the suggestion was made to us to eliminate the Appendix 8 reference and the year reference on the permit, just so when that permit gets renewed in 2024, that we don't have to go through code changes. So maybe just leave the specifics out of it while still referencing the stormwater permit. Our next steps, public outreach is now. Planning Commission recommendation coming up in a couple months, code adoption by August 1st. And then we begin these inspections January 1st. So now I'd like to open it up for discussion, and I am happy to go back through different slides and talk about, you know, the slides that are of interest.
Okay. Yeah. Any questions, comments? Commissioner Shattuck?
Sarah, I submitted some questions to you ahead of time. I don't know if you had a chance to take a look at those at all. You know, the ordinance itself really is in two parts. One is you have to implement best management practices, the operational best management practices. And the second, irrespective of what you, whether you do that or not, if you violate water standards, then you've got to implement the treatment and the structural BMPs. It is the way I read this, the ordinance. And so one of the big questions, let's start with the second piece of that, is what water quality standards does, say, a parking lot that was built in 1960 have to meet? Where as a business do I find those standards?
Well, we're not going to be sampling the business, like the, you know, the storm system at that business necessarily. We're just, all our inspection is doing is looking for if they have a spill kit, if they're regularly sweeping, if they're doing all those operational BMPs at that business. That's all our inspection is going to be doing.
So then when you say in the ordinance that if the operational BMPs allow violations of surface management standards, then you have to use applicable structural or treatment BMPs. What are the violations of surface management standards you're referring to?
So if there's an oil spill, we know that an oil spill is an illicit discharge. So no oil should be getting into the storm system at all. So if there's a business that has an oil spill all the time, like constantly, all the time, and is not taking care of their parking area, you know, there's leaks and spills all over. That's something that we would recommend. So
is the standard a subjective standard that Public Works would say, you know, I know pornography when I see it, you know, and this parking lot's a mess. So you're not meeting a surface management standard. Is that how you're going to, again, when you have that kind of if there's a violation of a standard, the business needs to know what that standard is. And what I'm hearing is, well, we'll know it when we see it, that you're not doing what you're supposed to do. And so I just want to make sure when I read this language, I know what I have to meet as a business.
So really quick, I'm Aslan Gallagher, and I'm the Stormwater Program Monitoring and Outreach Manager. And I think I hear what you're saying. So when the inspector goes out, how will they know if there's a discharge or not? And essentially, nothing is allowed into the storm system other than rainwater. So one of the tools that our inspectors uses is sampling for dissolved solids. So that's an indicator that there's something other than just stormwater entering the system into the storm drain. Any type of a sheen, anything where you can look upstream and see that there is leachate, you know, directly a point sort coming from the building's operations. Those are the types of water quality, you know, standards that we're talking about that we're going to see when we go out there.
So I can't go to a book and find these standards. I can't say, you know, at the Stormwater Manual itself in volume one talks about water quality standards for new construction and redevelopment. Mm-hmm. And so, but for an old parking lot, something that was built in the 60s or 70s, I'm not sure. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
I see what you're saying. So it's still going to be the same water quality standards for an old building or a new building. We are now, this is kind of filling that gap. You're getting to the exact intent, I think, of this program and this rule, is that we have standards for new buildings and new construction. And this is the filling that gap to where we now are requiring existing buildings to implement these best management practices in order to prevent any illicit discharges into the storm system. So it's going to be the same. And Sarah, what is it? I think, do you remember what it is for dissolved solids? It's like, do you know what I'm talking about? In order for the, it depends. So like for sediment.
I don't have anything right on.
Yeah, I mean, we can look that up and answer your question and get back to you with the actual parts per million of, you know, TSS that.
Right. And so just in terms of looking at the ordinance, when we get to actually passing it and saying we're going to enforce it, what you'll be telling the businesses is that a parking lot built in 1960 will have to meet the water quality standard that's in the 2019 manual for redevelopment and new development. And I'm not sure that complies with, but I just want to make sure that we've got that answer for business.
Okay. Yeah, okay. We don't want any illicit discharges into the storm system.
Okay.
Essentially zero.
Can I follow up with the other questions I had sent in ahead of time?
Sure.
The other thing, when we're talking about operational BMPs, particularly with regard to parking lots, is that a parking lot isn't always connected to a business. You know, whether it's a mall or a little strip mall, you've got common area. And so you may have, for example, in Silverdale, there's lots of situations where you've got a strip mall with five businesses and there's no assigned parking. So we don't know who is responsible for any particular spot in the parking lot. And the BMPs, the operational BMPs, would say, well, you have to have a system in place to put drip pans under dripping cars. Or you have to clean up spills. Good concept. But who has to do that? When you go out to enforce this and you're in this little strip mall with five people, who gets the warning and then the infraction? Is it the landlord? Is it all five businesses? How do we make that work given the real world where landlords and businesses are different? Have different responsibilities for parking lots.
So ultimately, it would be the responsibility of the property owner.
It'll be the same, Richard, as it would for any of the erosion sediment control issues that we run into. It could be your contract that's running well in a new construction, but that underlying property owner is always the one that's responsible because they own it.
Right. Well, just so the follow-up then is we're sending out these notices to businesses. Are we sending out the notices to the landlords too about this? Again, the little things like I've got people who have parking lots that are now going to have a required operational BMP to vacuum their parking lots as opposed to other cleaning methods they may have used in the past. It's probably going to be a fairly big deal to a little owner of a parking lot or a property that may be, you know, a debt above their, you know, their neck, haven't had rent paid by several of their tenants and have partial empty building, now told, hey, you got to vacuum your parking lot under the operational BMP. And so are we letting those property owners know that, hey, this is coming as well?
Yes, we sent out postcards to businesses, mailing addresses, and a lot of those are to the property owner.
So you've identified the property owners as well. Again, you sent one out to Mattress Ranch. You're not sending it out to the property owner. So I just want to make sure we're getting noticed to people.
Sarah, okay. Can you speak to the outreach that we've done as far as the postcards and the other methods of outreach?
Well, sure. We are going to hold an open house on the 26th for anyone who'd like to join. We've sent out gov delivery notices. We've sent out postcards. I sent out emails to all of the chambers of commerces.
Uh-huh.
Community advisory councils. Let's see, Kitsap Economic Alliance. And I will be speaking to the KBA, Kitsap Builder Association, on May 5th. So I feel like we've made a pretty good amount of awareness for those in this area.
Okay. If I might interject, and it isn't when your initial inspection comes up, if there are issues, you will identify them and there's time for the business / property owner to address those, correct?
Definitely. We always start with technical assistance.
Okay. So even if somebody is missed or doesn't pay attention, eventually it will get to the person that's responsible for it. Even though, you know, we would love 100% acknowledgement of it, but real world dictates. No. Okay. Any other questions or comments from the board members?
Can I go?
You can have your...
Yes, sir. Thank you.
I'm worried about the... Since we're setting up a program that takes the industrial, the development thing, and we're applying it to all land uses and all sources of pollution, that includes everybody's lawn.
It's only for business types in located.
Doesn't say that.
In Appendix 8 of the, it says it in the ordinance, the draft language.
So that's where it does say the lawns are exempted. It's only for commercial and multifamily. Appendix 8 exempts.
The issue is you've got an 1,100 page document, and the pertinent stuff starts halfway in about 497, you said.
Yeah.
Can we, when we're doing our public outreach, distill that down for the typical business owner who says, hey, you've got a parking lot, You need to have a spill kit. You need to have somebody trained. You need to vacuum it quarterly. And so that you can say to the building owner, go look it up in a 1,000-page document. Why can't we break it down to what we really need to tell the people that we're doing? And I would think that that would be part of your outreach program also. So that when he says, I have a parking lot, what I got to do?
So our plan is to create on our website documents, like links, like, you know, directly from the manual, guiding people to which BNP they need to be looking at for their business.
And you say there's 757 people that are going to be going out to be inspected. Does that include all the businesses, or does that include some subset of that?
It doesn't include all the businesses in Kitsap County, just the pollutant generating ones that match that Appendix 8 NAICS codes.
And I would also add to that concern or question that during our inspections, so this is just for the ordinance, but we're building an entire program for the source control program that will include educational materials such as handouts and pamphlets, laminated documents, you know, checklists for business owners that we're gonna take with us for our inspections. So each inspection is actually going to be more of like an educational visit. For the majority of the businesses that we go to, they'll already know this stuff, and it's very common practice for them, for the business owners. And we just don't foresee having a lot of issues or having people needing to make a lot of changes. It's going to be more offering to help, and letting them know why this is important for them, you know, and for everybody downstream from them, and for everybody using our surface waters that wants to have a clean Puget Sound. And so it's really gonna be more of an educational site visit where all of those questions can be answered at that time, and we can help them use the manual and help them see, you know, where all that information is. We'll also, like Sarah said, expand out on our website to help have some easy, quick links there that we can reference for their own future use while we're not standing there talking to them. So there's going to be lots of extra, you know, outreach and education to this. This is just the initial ordinance piece so that we have, you know, we have it in code. That we can go out, you know, that we have the right to essentially go out there and have these visits.
I would suggest for your outreach that you have in your back pocket what happens when somebody asks about how do I clean my dock? Because if you look at the Shoreline Master Plan, it says that the docks have to be 50% open grading so that we can sunshine to the water. The best practice says you have to A, sweep the birds' droppings and collect them. And then B, if you've got drainage, you have to block all the drains, wash it, and then collect the water. That's going to be very difficult. Just Thank a you. Suggestion.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. Any other questions, comments? No. Okay. Well, I appreciate the presentation. I hope this was helpful, and we will be hearing this at the public hearing, correct?
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
And I did send Amanda all the comments that everyone emailed in and the county responses to those. So be on the lookout for those from Amanda. And if you have any questions on any of that, just let me know and send questions to Amanda, and then I'll answer those as best I can.
Okay. All right.
Thank you.
All right. That brings us to the item H, the general public comment. Have we gotten any? I did not see any.
We do have one attendee that's logged in, but she's with the county, so we don't have any other public speakers.
All right. Okay. Seeing that, it's a little disturbing, but I'm sure we'll hear about it. Okay. Moving on, we'll close that comment period. And now for the good of the order or commissioner comments, does anybody have anything that they'd like to say or contribute for the good of the order? Going once, going twice. Okay, we will that. And do I have a motion? In that case, do I have a motion for adjournment?
I'll move adjourn.
Okay. And second?
I'll second.
All right. All those in favor of adjourning for tonight? Two. Unanimous. Okay. All right. Well, thank you much for everyone that presented. And we will see everybody back on May 3rd, I believe. Okay.
Thank you.
Good night.
Thank you, everyone.